This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 198 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, looking forward to a good show tonight, huh?
Absolutely. This is we've got some great stuff to talk about. We're also looking forward to a great weekend, but I think it'll probably be over by the time most people are listening to this. Again, we'll be down at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum Udvar-Hazy Center, adjacent to Dulles Airport, this coming Saturday, June 17th. And if you get this in time, this will be a great opportunity to have a fantastic AvGeek day, and you may even get to say hello to the two of us. So hope that works out.
We love it when we get to meet our listeners. So Max and I will be there. In all of our UAV Digest glory and Airplane Geeks glory. And we were fortunate enough to be privileged to be able to record there again this year. So we'd like to thank the Smithsonian. So for topics tonight, we've got NASA UTM, FAA versus Taylor, racing, more racing, a You're Grounded file, and some other stories. So with that, I think we should probably get started. Well, our first story comes from AUVSI.org. Traffic jam in the skies. NASA updates UTM effort. And for those who don't know, UTM is the UAS Traffic Management Program.
Now, the reason this is important, I think all of us are aware, but just to baseline everybody, the FAA says that we could be looking at 7 million drones flying in U.S. airspace by 2020, and that includes everything from hobbyists to commercial, package delivery, public agencies. Everybody's flying drones, and that's a lot of stuff flying up in the airspace. And so, of course, good traffic management is critical. Now, NASA has been tapped by the FAA to develop methods for managing UAS traffic, and that's what the UTM is. It's interesting, David, that I hadn't really considered this, but this is not a new role for NASA.
No, this isn't the first time. Originally, NASA did it under another name, which is NACA, N-A-C-A, which was the predecessor of NASA.
That's right. That was the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics.
I couldn't for the life of me, folks, remember advisory. But so they were the ones that set up the original air traffic management system in the United States.
Now, last week, we talked about how NASA was conducting tests at all six of the UAS test sites. And we mentioned the first one last week. But now it looks like tests have been completed at all six of the UAS test sites. And now it's time for NASA to, well, sit back and analyze the data that they've collected.
Yeah, and this is all done at NASA Ames. Now, we know about NASA Ames has been leading the front for NASA for the UTM. Our friend Max Trescott has gone to Ames, which is just around San Francisco, to the UTM conference last year and reported for us. So it's going to be a lot of work, and there's going to be a lot of data. And I know that this is One of the reasons why there's a lot more A anymore in NASA, they're focusing a lot on aerospace because drones will be a big deal, as well as other high value projects in the A. They've brought back the A. It's not just about space shuttles and rockets anymore. Yay.
Now, there's a lot more, as you say, David, there's a lot more for NASA to do. There's a quote from NASA's UTM technical lead. That's Joey Rios. And he says that, quote, "We have to work on the UAS platforms themselves. We have software development. We have simulation development. We have a lot of human factors work to figure out how to interact with these systems." So, I mean, don't look for a conclusion in the next month or two. There's still a lot of work to be done on this project.
It's funny that one of those categories was human factors to work on unmanned aerial systems, you know. And if you go back to my interviews at Langley, one of the conversations was, how does a manned vehicle react when there's a conflict with an unmanned vehicle? It's integration into the airspace is what we've been talking about. So slowly but surely, but we'll get there eventually. And if anybody can do it, NASA can.
Right. Now, there's been a lot of, well,
angst
about the Taylor versus FAA case, where the judge ruled that the FAA didn't have the ability, that it overstepped its statutory authority with drone registration. And we have an article here from Commercial UAV News that, well, it attempts to answer a question that I think a lot of people are asking.
Well, let's start off with John Taylor. John Taylor was a radio-controlled hobbyist. And when we came out with registration, which was in 2015, in December, he was a bit upset that basically the implication was he had to register his radio-controlled aircraft, model aircraft, which has always been an exception for the FAA. They are not, because of the Academy of Model Aeronautics, they are not to regulate model aircraft. They're a self-regulating industry and organization. Well, John Taylor was a radio control flyer, but he was also a lawyer, and he single-handedly fought the law and won, would you say?
I guess so. And so, as we've mentioned, the requirement for drone registration was thrown out by the court. The question that a lot of people ask, among other questions, is what does this all mean for commercial drone operators? And in Commercial UAV News, they take a look at that. The question, how does the ruling affect commercial UAS operators? And for the most part, it really doesn't affect them, does it?
No, it doesn't. This is really the argument was against recreational, not commercial. So the first thing is it really applies to recreational operators who are flown with visual line of sight of the person using the controls. So, and flown for strictly hobby or recreational use. You're not delivering packages. You're not, you may be taking pictures, but you're taking pictures for your own use. The moment you start selling those photographs to a real estate agent, then you're in a commercial use.
Right. You've crossed the line. It also doesn't apply to those who are flying in accordance with what we call the community-based set of safety guidelines. Of course, that's the AMA. It is limited to aircraft 55 pounds or less, unless it's been certified, and that can happen through an operational safety program administered by a community-based organization. But in general, it's below 55 pounds. Also, that the aircraft has to be operated in a manner that does not interfere with manned aircraft and gives way to manned aircraft when there's a conflict.
And when flown within 5 miles of an airport, the operator of the aircraft must provide the airport operator and airport traffic control tower, if any, with prior notification of the operation.
So if you pass all of those rules, all of those restrictions, then you don't have to register your drone. But if you do cross any of those, you've moved into a different category and the drone registration is back on the table.
Interestingly enough, the people in favor of the ruling are the Drone Users Group and the Academy of Model Aeronautics. However, it's interesting who's against the ruling. AUVSI, the Small UAV Coalition, the Commercial UAV Alliance, the Drone Manufacturer Alliance, and HAI, the Helicopter Association International. They're all commercial and business operations, and I think they want to look out for themselves that if somebody does something stupid as a recreational pilot, they're not going to get their finger pointed to, and that pilot will be charged with the reckless flying because their drone is registered. Would you agree?
Yeah. So when we say that the ruling doesn't affect commercial UAS operators, I guess one way to say it is correct. It doesn't affect them directly, but they're is a potential indirect impact, that being all of the other guys, the recreational flyers who are not subject to registration, who may not be flying safely or behaving properly. So I think that's a big part of the concern that these commercial and business organizations have.
And it is interesting because it was, I'm kind of sad about this because it really was sort of a successful project.
Yes,
the FAA
it was.
Never has the FAA turned around a legislation as quick as they did this. And everybody, for the most part, was happy with it and abiding by it. Now we're back to Wild West of non-regulation, you know. So be careful where you're flying. Remember what you're flying. And if you're not going to register your drone, there's going to be consequences if you're just fly safely and you won't have any issues.
And then as a final note, just for clarification, this ruling in no way impacts Part 107, right? That remains as is.
Absolutely. So our next story comes from the UAVDigest.com/news. Never heard of them.
This is our PR Newswire feed.
And this is the DRL, or the Drone Racing League, announces international partnerships for the 2017 race season and close of Series B investment round. So Drone Racing League has got another multi-year international partners and sponsors. Pretty neat.
Yeah, and this is really getting a lot of attention, as you can tell by the sponsors that are involved. Now, Alliance had already been announced as a sponsor. Actually, they're the global title sponsor, and Toy State had been announced as a sponsor. But now, adding to that, we have sponsors Amazon Prime Video, Swatch, Forto Coffee Shots, and the U.S. Air Force. You know, those are some pretty big sponsors. And the season, the racing season, begins in just a short time from now. In
next week.
Is that next week? Oh, my gosh. June 20th, 2017, on ESPN, at least in the United States. And the racing series is going to be broadcast in over 75 different countries with broadcast partners that include Sky Sports and Pro Siebensat. One, also Disney XD and OSN. So, you know, check what's available in your region and you may be able to watch the DRL series locally.
And they've also gotten $20 million in U.S. funds for financing, led by Sky, the network in Great Britain, Liberty Media Corporation, the owner of Formula One, and Lux Capital. As well as Alliance, who we formerly mentioned, and World Wrestling Entertainment. Mm. That was kind of an odd sort of duck. I like to think this is legitimate racing and not.
Yeah, a little bit different than the WWE bouts that we see.
And there's a lot of other. This is starting to take off. Hearst Ventures, you know, Hearst Media has been around for a long time. RSC Ventures, Lyra Hippow Ventures, capital in a seed fund, Courtside Ventures, a sports technology, and CRCM Ventures, which is a Chinese company.
They support, they invest in Chinese companies. They're a U.S. company that provides seed money in Silicon Valley and in China, which is kind of an interesting duopoly there. But what we see here is a whole litany of VC firms, venture capital firms. So $20 million, that ought to be pretty helpful to continuing to grow the drone racing league. So between the financial investment by these companies and the sponsors that they've been getting, they couldn't ask for much more, I don't think. They've got the resources they need, and hopefully this will be a great success.
And I love the fact that the Air Force was smart enough to become a sponsor.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah,
I mean, they're running this on, I've seen it on Disney XD. So you're running it with young kids and teenagers, and you can hook them in, we'll pay you to fly drones like these. Kudos to the Air Force for picking up on this. This is a good thing. But let's talk about more racing. This is a little longer race. We talked about Hearst in the last story. Imagine going back to the 30s and 40s and you're a newspaper magnate and you want to make up a story. Well, what do? You put up prize money to see if you can cross the Atlantic solo. Well, iRobotics, what's old is new again, challenges tech giants to race across the Pacific with drones. This is from thedrive.com. And we got this actually via Aopa Drone Pilot. So Japanese startup iRobotics.
They're proposing this race, right? From Tokyo to San Francisco.
Yep. Open to anyone. And Red Bull is also promoting the race, and that will mean there's two different types of drones, small, low altitude, recreational package delivery, etc., or large, high altitude drones like what Facebook and Airbus are looking at. We've gone back to the 20s and 30s, Max. We're using a race to push ahead in aerospace development for UAVs.
iRobotics is interested primarily in drones between those extremes, between the small, low altitude things that we talk about probably the most, in those large high altitude drones. They're looking at sort of the middle ground. They have some concepts that really involve something in the middle, something around 2 meters wide, something that flies about 3 to 5 kilometers per hour. Something that's got some pretty significant lift capability, something that's got a price tag of around $100,000 per drone. So they're looking at designing and developing something pretty substantial. And I think that while they're open to almost anything in this race across the Pacific, you're not going to see small quadcopters flying across the Pacific. Almost certainly, it's going to be something larger. And that's kind of the market that iRobotics is interested in. I think that there's talk about a prize, like you say, David, for this, but it hasn't been specified yet. And I think iRobotics is kind of waiting to see if they have any takers for this proposed race.
And the other thing is, it's been done. We flew a Global Hawk from the United States and California to Australia, and it did it by itself. So it can be done, but a Global Hawk's a little bit more expensive than a $100,000 aircraft.
Yeah.
So let's talk about my least favorite topics, but we really need to talk about this one. Was pretty interesting. Is another one from your Grounded files. Hit and run drone collision causes power outage for 1,600 people in Google's hometown. This was from greentechmedia.com. 1,600 people in Silicon Valley area of Mountain View lost power for 3 hours when a drone flew into a high voltage wire. A white-haired white adult man was seen fleeing the scene driving a white car.
So the obvious question is, what color do you think the drone was, David?
White?
I don't know.
What color do I think the drone was? I think it was a white quadcopter that has red and green lights on it, and everybody knows which one I'm talking about.
Probably. So, yeah, there were witnesses in this case, or at least people that say they saw this suspicious-looking person, especially considering the fact that he fled the scene after this drone strike. But, boy, here's some really bad behavior.
But I want to use this story to tell you about a wayward drone and two drone lovers who found the wayward drone. That would be Max Flight and Drone Mama.
That's right.
And they actually found the owner of said wayward drone. You want to impart a little bit of your virtuous recovery of a poor little drone lying on the side of the road?
It was in the edge of the road, right against the curb as we were driving by. Actually, as we drove past it, we both looked at each other and said, that's a drone. So there being no traffic around, we backed the car up, and sure enough, there's a little quadcopter on the edge of the road there, which was still active. The lights were on and everything. So first thing I did was turn it over, disconnect the battery. And we looked around to see if anyone was looking for a drone or any neighbors outside that we could ask if they knew who owned it. And there was nothing. So we just set it on the side of the road, out of the street, and went on our business. But when we came back about an hour later, it was still there. So we picked it up, took it home. Drone Mama posted in a couple of town Facebook groups, sort of, did anybody lose a drone in the vicinity of, you know, such and such street? And actually, the neighbor of the owner saw the posting and made contact and said he described it perfectly, and it was owned by the 9-year-old neighbor of his. So he came by, retrieved the drone. The best part was I gave him the UAV Digest business card, but on the back of it, I wrote knowbeforeyoufly.org. And I said, here, give this to the kid. And if he hasn't seen that website, point that out to him and encourage him to pay close attention to the information that he would find there. So that's the story.
You know, the lost wayward drone, you know, Max and Drone Mama are going to create a home for lost drones. They'll start migrating to their house in Connecticut, and you'll be able to adopt drones coming shortly from the UAV Digest Adopt a Drone program for wayward drones.
That was actually suggested too by someone in our Slack team. We should start something sort of like a Craigslist for lost
wayward drones.
Yeah, but.
Well, let's get back to some hard news, which is, this was from geospatialworld.net. China launches record-breaking swarm of drones. The previous record, though, I can't remember, and my co-host has put here, because I can't verify this, was a swarm of 67 drones. And I vaguely remember that this 67 drones was the swarm that did the, I want to say World Series, but I mean Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, it was different, according to the Chinese. According to them, it was actually the same group that had this larger record, and that's the China Electronics Technology Group Corporation, CETC. And they say that in November last year, 2016, they flew 67 drones during the China International Aviation and Aerospace Exhibition in Zhuhai. But now they say the same organization has broken that record with a swarm of 119 drones.
It's a lot of buzzing.
It's a lot of
buzzing. That was what my thought was. I was like, boy, is that loud. Swarming is an important technology. We know that the Pentagon here in the United States want to use swarming drones for various things, and China is not far behind, and evidently, if we believe this, they're ahead of us. So interesting. It's a lot of drones being controlled at one time, which is kind of amazing. And I think if we started this 197 episodes ago, we wouldn't be thinking about 119 drones all being operated by basically two or three people.
And just also, I'd mention that this company, CETC, like almost all Chinese aerospace corporations, are owned by the government. So this is something that you can view as a military, let's say, accomplishment rather than a commercial accomplishment. So, like you say, David, the Chinese are, we know that they are the leading producers of drones, or at least on a smaller scale, but they are also clearly interested in advancing the technology, and swarming is one example of that.
Okay, let's talk about a very tough subject. And if you listen to our other show, Airplane Geeks, for general aviation and business aviation, this is not a good thing. But our president has started an initiative that's been going round and round for the last, 15 years, which is privatization of air traffic control. The United States air traffic control system is run by the FAA, and we talked about it being created by NACA, but it's run by the FAA. Other nations have it privatized, meaning that companies do the job of the government. Now, this was from TWCnews.com. Drone enthusiasts see benefit in privatizing air traffic control. A lot of drone pilots think that the privatization would be beneficial for them over the government control. What do you think, Max?
I think the number of people that think this is overstated in this article. It comes from Spectrum News in Austin, Texas, and Spectrum is a cable company, internet service provider as well. So they're not a news organization per se, at least as far as I can tell. And they really only offer up two folks from one company. And what they really talk about in the interview is that the FAA doesn't have the manpower. And, you might think, given the title of the article, that they're talking about doesn't have the manpower to develop the air traffic control systems that are needed, so that if we privatize air traffic control, then, we may get a traffic management system sooner. Except that in the interviews, they're talking about manpower to enforce the rules. Now, that's also true. The FAA does not have a large enforcement arm that can handle thousands, millions, however many drones are going to be up there. So I think the article is a little bit misleading in that regard. I think it might have been stated a little bit differently, but when they talk about drone enthusiasts being in favor of privatizing air traffic control, I think they're overstating the feeling of drone enthusiasts.
And let's be clear, I will speak for myself, not for my co-host, but it's not a good idea. We have the safest airspace in the world, and one of the reasons is because the FAA is good at running it, as well as the fees and other charges that go into this. But from a drone perspective, we'll see how it affects it. Really, it's all going to come down to the next FAA authorization, and if there's no money in the authorization, we're all in trouble, because a lot of these programs are being funded currently through the FAA. And if we lose that funding, there goes a lot of things, and it will delay implementation to the UTM and National Aerospace.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the arguments that's made by people who are in favor of privatizing air traffic control, is that we need to, because it's such a critical function, a critical government function, that it really should be separate from the vagaries of reauthorizations. And if you know the history of FAA reauthorizations, you would know
it's painful.
It's very painful. And so one of the arguments is we can avoid that pain if we instead privatize that so that its funding is outside of the government process. But however, that's just one consideration. As you say, David, there are many, many other considerations that are very unattractive, at least in my opinion, I know in yours, when it comes to should we privatize air traffic control. But it's something that we're going to be hearing about and talking about for months through the fall or through the end of the year when the reauthorization comes up again. So, but David, with that, I think we should wrap it up. We've had a number of interesting topics to discuss. If you all listening have some thoughts on any of these, some opinions, either agree with us or disagree with us, we'd love to hear them. We always enjoy that.
And what's the best way to do that?
You can reach us with email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. You can write us something, or if you want to record something, a message to us or your thoughts, we always love that. It is a podcast, so we love audio. It's easy. You can just record with your smartphone or something, send us an MP3 file. But otherwise, writing it out is fine.
Or as he's trying to pull it out of his co-host, because this is not his forte, something about a listener team.
All right,
would
yeah.
be a great way to talk to us.
That's right, our Slack listener team. You know, a lot of organizations are using Slack now to create a environment that's just focused on a particular topic, and ours is not open to everybody. You have to request an invite. So there is that step involved. It's a slightly complicated, but it keeps the participants on the team really focused to this topic. The way I like to put it is that the signal-to-noise ratio is really high, much, much higher than you'd find on Facebook or Twitter or a lot of those other things as well.
And you get the nice feeling of being part of a private club.
So if you want to learn more about that, you can find out at
theuavdigest.com/team. Right. Or just send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com with your email address, and Max and I will send you an invite. And you can also interact with us on Twitter @UAV Digest. You can interact with us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can buy some swag at our Cafe Press store, become a sponsor at our Patreon account. And of course, what you really can do for us, and we would really appreciate it, is leave a review either on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play so other people can find us. And if you know anybody who you think might be a good guest or a topic that you might want to get us to discuss, we like it when other people do our work. So with that, I would say send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. So with that, I guess we're done. I'm looking forward to seeing you, my friend, on Friday. And this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.